listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Welcome to Hockey Central at Noon, presented by Lexus on the Park. Jeff Merrick in for Darren Millard, the boys on a plane. So we're in the studio. We includes Brad May. We includes John Shannon on the set last night, wrapping up yesterday's exciting Game 4. We thought there would be brooms. We thought there would be a sweep. Not so fast. Henrik Lundqvist steals the show, 40 saves. And as he said last night in the press conference, the thought of that trophy being presented to another team made him sick to his stomach.
I didn't really hear what he said. I was just enamored the way he looked. I mean, does this guy look like, he looks like the world's most interesting man. He's got this beautiful suit on. It didn't look like he ever sweated. His hair was perfect.
He's worn Zevon. His hair was
holy
perfect.
Holy smokes.
And he's fresh off the runways of Milan, and he stopped 40 shots. Did we mention that yesterday? Right. Some 10 bell saves last night for Henrik Lundqvist.
And he got lucky.
Of course he did. He got lucky. And as you pointed out, Brad, on Hockey Central last night, something significantly changed. A switch went off when Dustin Brown scored the goal that made this a 2-1 game, and then it was all Los Angeles. It was essentially Los Angeles versus Henrik Lundqvist, the Swedish goaltender, won.
Yeah, there was no doubt about it. I think when you're looking in that situation, the Los Angeles Kings, looking at the opportunity of winning in Madison Square Gardens, you know, and not extending the series, sometimes you take that for granted. You think it's just going to happen. You're deserving. Mm-hmm. And there's no game less deserving, really. You have to show up and you got to put it on the line. So I think LA maybe started a little slower than obviously we saw them finish last night. But New York did everything they possibly could to win that game. And there's no doubt we were talking about this series. Henrik Lundqvist had to be the best player, had to outplay Jonathan Quick at the other end of the rink. And he did that. And can he do it again? I believe he can. Can he do it four times? I don't think
so. He's going to have to certainly do it tomorrow night. But at the same time, I'm not sure the Los Angeles Kings, who have averaged 3.5 goals a game in these playoffs, are just going to score one. And I think that at a certain point, the Ranger goal scoring is going to have to come into effect as well. And then you have to wonder, I know Marty St. Louis scored last night, but, Rick Nash still hasn't scored. Brad Richards still hasn't scored. Derek Stepan, who, was so good coming off of the jaw injury in the Montreal series, where is he? Chris Kreider, they're going to need some offensive performances to make a difference tomorrow night if they expect to take it back to the Garden next Monday.
How much are the Rangers hurt by a lack of production from the back end? It essentially is only Ryan McDonagh back there. It's almost to the point where you say to yourself, the one guy the Rangers really miss on that back end on the power play specifically is Michael Delzato, who they traded the Nashville Predators for Kevin Klein.
Well, and that's a really good point. And you have to wonder that I know that Alain Vigneault juggled the lines a lot last night, but their power play is, I think it's 1-for-16 in the final. There's still some residue of John Tortorella's defense, and they're still that defense first, block the shot first. And you're right, Ryan McDonagh, who has, I think opened a lot of people's eyes through this whole playoff, is the only way that their blue line gets involved. Strawman, I guess, can a little bit, but at the same time, he's been so defense-oriented, it's silly.
Well, we talked last night that Rafael Diaz, who's not in the lineup,
right.
That's the one guy that could help their power play, big shot from the back end. But the other thing I'd say, they're in the Stanley Cup Finals for one reason. And their defense has been solid, blocking shots like we just talked about. Girardi, who's had a couple blunders in the final, a couple miscues, mistakes, and honestly just bad breaks. Obviously his stick broke. He fell down in game one, and it led to the overtime winner, Justin Williams. So, but I really, John Moore being inserted back into this series, after being suspended, he's been I actually have turned into a fan of John Moore. I like the way he skates. He gets up in the play. He's all over, but he's responsible. And I like their back end. I think it's what the defense's position outside of, certain phenoms, it's about playing defense and keeping the puck out of your own zone and net. I think they've done a good job
with
that.
But then And I'm not disagreeing with you. If your expectation is that you don't get very much from the blue line, then your four lines, because you know darn well the other team is rolling four lines, your four lines better contribute. All four lines better contribute. That's the one thing that we probably haven't seen in this series as much that we did see in the Montreal series when, you know, when Dorsett, Moore, and Boyle contributed a key goal here or there or a key checking movement. Because you know, I mean, whoever the – I mean, I laugh at Daryl Sutter's situation because he talks about four lines and the fourth line. The way they play, I'm not sure. I think they got a one line and a 1A, 1B, and 1C line at times. Because when you got, you know, Carter with Pearson and Toffoli doing what they do, Mike Richards' group doing what they do, who, gosh, he's been fun to watch the last couple of games.
All of a sudden.
The depth of these two teams has come, and I truly believe the 3-1 lead by the Kings is because their 12 forwards are better and are doing better things all the time than the Ranger 12 forwards are.
So if you're the Los Angeles Kings, so they flew back last night, the Rangers fly back today. If you're the Los Angeles Kings flying back to L.A. last night, are you thinking, A, you know what, that really was our game. We just got beat by a better goaltender. He stole a game. Or are you saying to yourself, hold on a second, boys. We don't want to let happen what we let happen 2 years ago against the New Jersey Devils, up 3-0 and let them back in the series.
Well, I'm sure that a man of little words, Daryl Sutter, has said that somehow already, if not the players themselves saying it. You know, it was funny. Tyler Toffoli before the game yesterday said he fell asleep around midnight, woke up at 2, and then didn't get back to sleep for 4 or 5 more hours because he was so excited that he might win the Stanley Cup. Well, you know what?
It's awesome, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, you know what? Those senior guys are going to have to take them under their wing and say, hey, listen, we're going to the hotel again tonight, because the Kings have done that for every home game. They go to a hotel and stay before the game. They're going to have to be a lot more pragmatic about what tomorrow night is. And I truly believe that the incentive of winning at home, and you won the Stanley Cup at home, it's such a vast difference. You know, the celebration with 40 of your closest friends on the road versus 18,000 of your closest friends at home. I think there's a big difference for those guys. I think that's incentive enough.
You know, let's detour that and go back to 2007, Brad, and your Anaheim Ducks winning 5 against the Ottawa Senators. Were there any Tyler Toffolis on your team to the point where they couldn't sleep the night before?
Number 24.
I was going to melt. Yeah, maybe it's.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think it was Mayday who was chasing Chris Neal all over the ice in games 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. But, you know, was that Corey Perry? Was that Ryan Getzlaff? Was that the Dustin Penner? Some of the younger guys on your team who are, you know, they just can't believe they're in that situation that early in their career to be a game away from the winning Stanley Cup?
Well, for that experience, we only had one guy that had won a Stanley Cup on our team. The LA Kings have 16. Experience is key here, guys. The being there, been there, done that attitude, they understand. They can go back, and it's not long ago, right? 2 years for them. For us,
Scott Niedermeyer was the only one on your team.
Yeah. Chris Pronger had been there. Robbie Niedermeyer got to game 7.
Wow.
Jaguar got to game 7, won a Conn Smythe.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who else had got to the final.
I think it was, John, you may know this better than I do. I think it was the 1989 Calgary Flames who were the last team to win a Stanley Cup and not have any Stanley Cup winners. With all due respect to Terry Criss, but he was the coach.
You might be
not
right.
Have any Stanley Cup winners on the team.
You may be right.
And that's so rare that, you know, you guys just had the one.
So to answer your question, I think all of us had difficulty sleeping. Now, the one thing that we did that's different than the LA Kings going back to win game 5 at home, we woke up this morning in Ottawa, and I believe the bus was at 8:30. We were on the runway at 9 or something, and we flew out back to Anaheim. We had a practice the moment we landed. That was our program throughout the whole playoffs. We'd always fly back the day after, and we'd always practice. And, of course, some guys couldn't practice because they were banged up, but we get on the ice, and they weren't easy practices. They weren't like morning skates.
Not for Andy Carlisle.
And it was a program that we basically, you know, we had for months. So the one thing I'd say when you brought it up last night in our show was the LA Kings flew back last night.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers are flying today, or this morning they left. will we see the difference in the two teams? Because there is, you know, there is fatigue and flying through the night, red eyes. But the difference is you gain 3 hours going that way. Right.
So they probably got home between 2 and 2:30 Pacific time.
And you know what? So the advantage there is they'll be able to sleep in, and then they probably have a practice, I would say, or a light, you know, workout or meeting, whatever, at the Staples Center, or probably at their practice rink by where they live.
Yeah.
And then they go to their hotel. But flying today, you know, the one thing about after games, you can't sleep anyways. Even if you wanted to go home, no matter if you played 50 minutes and then went to triple overtime, you can't fall asleep as soon as you get home. You're so wired up and full of adrenaline. And so those LA King guys, thinking of, you know, what they could have had, they're probably wide awake anyways on that airplane and going home. So I'm interested to see the energy level on both teams.
If you were the coach last night,
I'd fly home today only because it worked for my team and my experience. So just going back to that experience. However, I think the West Coast teams have an advantage going back to the West because they have to do it, you know, nightly or weekly throughout the regular season. They're always flying back, you know, gaining that time, but they understand their bodies and their systems and how to do it. The East Coast teams flying to the West, it's easier going West, not, by the way, but it's a little more difficult because their travel is so much less in the East Coast.
Remember, the whole series has basically been on Eastern time. When you think about eight o'clock puck drops, and eight Eastern time puck drops, so 5 o'clock.
Do you know what's amazing about that though? Randy Carlyle had us up. We had 8:30 practices. Typically, they're 10:30 at home.
Yeah.
On a game day, we were on the ice at 8:30.
Right, I remember.
And we'd get there. It's literally so he actually had our bodies or you know our minds anyways in a program that we all had to show up. And there's only a couple guys that missed practice: Getzlaff, Perry, Penner,
May.
Myself, I'm always part of that scrub group of guys, but there was about 10 or maybe even 15 of us that literally practiced hard throughout the playoffs. Yeah. That's what Randy had us doing anyways.
It is a 2-1 final, so there will be a game 5.
By the way,
Friday at 8 o'clock.
Kings arrived at 3:36 a.m. this morning.
Right.
3:38. So.
You wonder what's said on that flight, or if anything is said on that flight. To your guys' point, I mean, there's a number of players that have already won the Stanley Cup. You wonder if anything needs to be said. Dave Maloney joins us, analyst for the New York Rangers, after a big 2-1 victory, and everyone heads back to the Staples Center for Game 5 on Friday. So, Dave, work with me here. So, in Game 3, two pucks go off, two Rangers skates, and past Henrik Lundqvist. Last night, two pucks lay on the red line behind Henrik Lundqvist and don't go in. In the Rangers' mind, is it even now?
Well, I guess, you know, at this stage, who really knows, right? I mean, you started September, you're playing in the middle of June, and who knows what breaks are, what fair is, or what fate is, or what destiny, all of the above. I think you just take the game 4 win and move on. The better one was really the second one between the ice shavings and the snow that was there. And a close look at it. Lundqvist's pad looks like it's heading straight to knock the puck over the line, and he just moves his pad. I'm almost positive it can't be a conscious effort because he has no idea where the puck is, and that pad just kind of waffles to the one side and misses the puck. So it's you know what? It's been a great this Ranger story has been a great story all year. Season long. I mean, they still have a daunting task ahead of them, but it's a little less daunting than it was this time yesterday.
You know what was interesting about the Lundqvist situation was he admitted after the game that he yelled at the referee that he had the puck frozen. You can see it behind him, and then he went and apologized to Wes McCauley for it.
Yeah, well, you could tell, like, from our angle up in the booth, I saw McCauley right on top of the net, and he couldn't get on him too much for not blowing the play dead because he must have seen something that we couldn't see through Lundqvist.
Right.
So, really, the officiating a lot of times takes the brunt of criticism from all of us who are not officials, but... McCauley in the right spot, the right call, and no surprise that Henrik Lundqvist would then acknowledge to McCauley just that. So, Yeah, it was a heart-stopping moment from those who saw it and those who didn't see it, and you move on.
Hey, Dave, in game three, the LA Kings had 15 shots on net, and they won the game 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually talked about already that, you know, the second half of game four was all LA, 26-3 in shots, I believe. And do we make too much of the lack of offense or the lack of shots on net in a winning effort? Because obviously a team goes to a different, you know, different formation, that more of a defensive set. Do we make too much of it? Because, or do you just say a win's a win and move on and try to be better tomorrow, I guess?
Well, you know what, Brett, I think there's a couple of things. You go back to game three and the Rangers outshot the Kings 11-2 in the third. And I think maybe it's just human nature that you kind of hunker down. And what you do know from Los Angeles is certainly, you know, they use the word relentless, and that is an appropriate term. This Los Angeles team is a good team. There's no question. So I think it's obvious to conclude. I don't think that from a strategy standpoint, the Rangers are trying to hunker down. They know LA is coming. And yet it's probably a combination of the Rangers just trying to protect what they've built over the course of a period and a half. And LA being who they are, that they just keep coming. And they keep coming regardless of score. They've proven that time and time again over the course of this playoff series. So I think it's, you know, it's a talking point, but I don't think it's a strategic change from the Rangers' standpoint. As a matter of fact, Alain Vigneault said after, you know, you urge your team to keep playing their toes, not in their heels, to chip the puck up ice, and yet those things don't seem to happen because the Kings also have something to say about the play.
When you were watching in the third period, Marty St. Louis and Dominic Moore each had an opportunity off the rush. I want to say they both came from the right-hand side, and they actually, one was a backhand, the other one was a wrist shot, trying to create offense to get the puck to the net, and it was on a one-on-one situation. As an analyst that you're in the building, would you want to see those players kind of, you know, not pull up necessarily, but, you know, start the grind game in the corner and create offensive zone time rather than one and done situations?
Right. No, I think that's, you know, it's certainly easier. I know I certainly had the privilege of playing in the league for a number of years, and the game is an awful lot easier up top than it is on the ice. And I do think if you have the puck in those situations, they're probably, I don't know, at least three options, right? You can chip it and chip it soft and chase. You can hold it, or you can try and make a play to the net. I think the play to the net is fine if you get it on the net. I know Dominic Moore off the backhand on the right side, you give him credit because his team has been accused of not getting the puck to the net. In that situation, in a game, maybe the better thing is to keep it or just to soft chip it, not to kind of get it to the net where it misses the net and essentially becomes a clearing option for LA. So I think what you have to think from an analyst standpoint or when you watch it is the fact that you probably want to make the play that is going to create an opportunity to keep it up ice, but not turn it over and have them come the other way.
Right.
But I will be, I don't know that I'm the first ex-player to acknowledge that the game is a lot easier up top. It's on the ice.
David, you played on the 79 team that lost in 5 to Montreal. You were around in 94 when they beat the Canucks in 7. How does the vibe in Manhattan differ this time around compared to those last two finals?
So, well, I think our 79 team was a little like this team. There's not a lot of people. If people had said, you know, it's going to be Montreal and the Rangers in the finals, they go, okay, Montreal we get. We're not so sure about the Rangers. And I think also, too, this go-around, the finals, I don't think LA had to come through, you know, certainly three legitimate contenders to get here. And the Rangers, I think the Flyers thought they may have had a chance against the Rangers. I know Pittsburgh would rather have played the Rangers because he didn't want to play the Flyers. And when Montreal slew the Wicked Witch of the East in Boston, I think they thought, well, it's just the Rangers and then the finals. So that being said, I think this Rangers story in this city has carried a really good story, a good vibe. You know, you talk about the human interest things with St. Louis and Dominic Moore, and even you can throw Richards coming off the mat last spring, and making a season for himself. And Mark Stahl, a guy who this time a year ago, I'm not sure people were convinced he was going to be able to come off a pretty traumatic eye injury and play. Vigneault coming in. There's a lot of good stories with this group. And I think perhaps ultimately the motivating factor in Game 4 last night might have been nobody wanted to see L.A. raise the cup at home. And if that was the difference for Game 4, then that became the rallying point for the club and for the crowd. Now you got to find another way to get at it in Game 5 to get it back for Game 6. So I think ultimately the vibe in this city is just that. It's been a great story. They've been a great watch. And you still have another chance.
With Dave Maloney, Rangers analyst, joining us on Hockey Central at noon. What's your read on Alain Vigneault? We've seen him be steely serious. We've seen him Netflix funny. Will the real Alain Vigneault please stand up? What's your read on the Rangers head coach, Dave?
Well, first of all, my read it's obvious he is certainly a different feel than John Tortorella. There's no question. It's been different from day one. It hasn't been as big a grind. That being said, John Tortorella got his club 2 years ago within two games to get to the finals. There's a couple things that have impressed me, or you have to acknowledge. He had coached in a big market. He had coached in a very fanatic market when it comes to hockey. I don't think the hockey market, from that frantic stuff that it is in a Canadian city, is the same in New York. It's not. But also I think what's key to him, he coached big time, big money players in Vancouver, guys who had made money, guys who were making a lot of money. And I think that's key, a veteran thing, and how he comes in here. And, you know, you've got Lundqvist, you've got Richards, you've got Nash, you've got Girardi, you've got guys that have been around a little bit, the guys that make money. So I think he's handled all of that wonderfully. His game is a possession game. It's a game that you block a shot to make a play to get up ice. You're encouraged to make a play. So all in all, my read on him, it's funny. He says a lot. He's out there. He's accessible. But he really doesn't say a lot. He's not that accessible, but he carries it well. You know, you're not offended by the fact that he really doesn't say a lot, you know, but he's very pleasant about doing such.
So he says more than Daryl.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's he's another character. I really respect them both. I think it's hard not to respect any coach that gets his team to this state of the season, and I say that with John Tortorella. I mean, he got a group of guys to within two games. So at the end of the day, there's really going to be only one coach that doesn't have to rationalize anything, and it's still Joel Quenneville.
Yeah.
But there's close to being another coach that's going to assume the mantle of, you know what, I don't have to rationalize anything, I'm a winner.
Interesting you talk about the Rangers being a puck possession team, but we've observed on our show that they've been so much more effective scoring off the rush, and then their power play is absolutely brutal. So you'd right. think that their puck possession, particularly in the offensive zone, would be better than it is.
I think, John, when you talk about their power play, their power play lacks that big bomb from the point. And I don't know. You look at L.A.'s power play, and it hadn't been very good either. I mean, the power play to me is a mystifying commodity. The longer a season goes, you go back when the Bruins won it over Vancouver, and I don't think their power play scored in the finals.
No, it was awful.
But I think the difference to me, a puck possession, a quick strike team is like Chicago. Now, again, you get the top five or six guys on that club, when they start zipping it around on the offensive end, they don't need a whole lot of chances to get a quality chance. The Rangers zip it around, but I'm just not sure on the skill end. They certainly won't shoot and ask questions later. So they probably don't get as many chances as they probably should get given the possession they do have and the speed with which they play. I think their game, you know, when you talk about their quickness is, you know, they change direction. You know, they're quick on a forecheck. They're quick to pursue the puck. But I'm not sure that quickness dovetails into what you see from a Chicago's example. So there's a couple things, but I don't have – watching this club all season long, they're not going to out-physical the Kings. That's like feeding the beast, I think.
Yeah.
And yet they have to rely on who they are, and that's being quick, mm-hmm. being smart, and all those things with the puck, and hope that they can get one because – watching four games of this series, I think you have a better chance if you can get a lead on L.A. Because, boy, oh, boy, when they got it to 2-0 in the third, or in the early in the second in game three, despite the shots in the third, I didn't think the Rangers had any chance of winning that hockey game.
The one thing you can say about the Rangers' power play in the last two games specifically, even though they haven't found the back of the net, they are now finally generating chances. Mm-hmm. So that's a positive mm-hmm. sign for the Rangers. Dave, it's always a pleasure catching up. Enjoy game five and perhaps six and dare
well,
we say seven.
Luck, guys. And the Rangers live to tell another tale. So I guess that's all you have.
Say hello to Kenny for us.
I will. If I can find him, he's probably flying somewhere. So.
Thanks, Dave. Much appreciated.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Rangers analyst Dave Maloney and former NHLer himself. We got about a minute and a half here. I just want to get your thoughts on non-Stanley Cup final issue. Breaking yesterday, Brian Murray, general manager, Ottawa Senators, talking about Jason Spezza, said he's requested a trade. You know, this is, you know, not even one season deep into his captaincy of the Ottawa Senators. When this news broke late yesterday afternoon, guys, what went through your mind? Mayday, we'll start with you.
I was upset with Jason Spezza. When I heard this, that he asked for a trade, he's a captain, an honor bestowed upon him. Upon reflection, I went home last night. I thought about what we talked about last night. He's played 11 years in the National Hockey League. He's an incredibly skilled player. Has his speed dropped? I don't know. If he puts together 3 months of hard work, you know, everybody's allowed to do whatever they want. And I think we came out last night and I said, this guy's not a winner and this guy doesn't have character. And I think I'm wrong on that. Mm-hmm. I really do. Although he's got to show me more if he does end up in another location. But Jason Spezza, I played against him in the Stanley Cup final. This guy was a heck of a player. He got shut down by our guys.
It was a long
great
time
for
ago,
us.
Brad.
It's a long time.
The thing that I would say about it, and I was hard on him too. I understand that. But this was an organization after the Alfredson situation last summer. Felt themselves backed into a corner that they had to give him the captaincy. I mean, he was because they were afraid how he would act if they didn't. So they give him the captaincy, and I'm not sure you saw enough out of him to be the captain. And so it ended up being a double whammy. Not only do you appoint the wrong guy captain, you don't get a little spurt of energy from him, and then you have a guy at the end of the season that wants out. Now, is it better for the Senators that he leaves? Maybe it is. Maybe it is. And maybe there'll be that general manager out there that says, I can rehabilitate Jason Spezza, if that's mm-hmm. the right word, to make him a better player, a better team player, and help the power play.
My only comment to this is if Jason Spezza wasn't the right guy to become captain, it shouldn't be on Jason Spezza because he accepted the role. It's the people that actually were actually put him in that position.
Everybody else
has to look in the mirror in that decision.
I think there's a lot of people within that organization that have to look in the mirror for the last 12
and
months.
And it's unfair and unfortunate that Jason Spezza is going to get the brunt of all of that if he's not the right guy. Because some guys
Except
are great hockey players that don't want to have that responsibility.
But if he lobbied for the captaincy, Brad. If he lobbied for the captaincy.
And that I don't know. I'm just saying that if it's not all on him if it was a bad decision.
It does look, though, as if this is the end of that era of the Ottawa Senators. Started with Alfredson, now Jason Spezza. Listen, Chris Phillips is on the back nine of his career. You wonder about Chris Neal as well. I mean, he's some long miles in that hockey player's career.
Love that guy.
I know, wonderful guy. Every team wants to have a guy like Chris Neal. But you wonder if that is, you know, this really is the end of that era of Ottawa Senators who crescendoed against your team in 2007, five games in the Stanley Cup final only to fall short. We take a break. We come back. We'll talk to Hamilton Red Wings forward Riley Dunda. HamiltonHealth.ca/FightRileyFight is the website. Suffered a stroke, the 19-year-old young man did, on May the 3rd. We'll talk to the Hamilton Red Wings forward when Hockey Central at Noon, presented by Lexus on the Park, returns on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Welcome back to the program. Hockey Central at Noon, presented by Lexus on the Park. Jeff Merrick for Darren Millard. Brad May, Stanley Cup champion 2007. John Shannon aboard as well. Pleased to be joined. I'm a big OJHL fan. You guys know that.
I know
follow,
you are.
Follow
I
my
know
Stouffville
you are.
Spirit. I love the OJ. And a member of the Hamilton Red Wings here to talk to us about a massive stroke that he suffered going back to May the 3rd as a forward for the Hamilton Red Wings. He is Riley Dunda. He joins us now. Riley, I know we're talking to you at the Regional Rehabilitation Center. That's Hamilton General. Can you take us back? And first of all, hello and welcome to the program. Can you take us back to May 3rd and what exactly happened?
It was mostly just it was morning and looked around and then fell. And that's all I remember, really, just falling. And yeah, that's all I can remember.
Yeah, and it was a massive stroke, and thankfully your mom was there to help you and get you help right away. Where are you at right now with your rehabilitation?
I'm pretty far along. I have I think next week's my final week, and then I get rehab through outpatient, which means like. The guys who don't live at the hospital anymore, and we'll see how it goes from there.
You talk about the rehab, Riley. So, your thought about ever trying to play the game again? Are you still upbeat about that?
Gonna try to play next year, and then we'll see what happens.
Hey, Riley, you're a young man. You got the world in front of you. You're an athlete. You're playing hockey, and you suffer this. Unbelievable. I guess it would be an attack, right?
Stroke.
Yeah. And has it changed your view as a young man on the world, on what Riley Dunda is going to be and how you're going to, because I think what you're doing right now for the awareness of stroke care is absolutely unbelievable. It's very, so unselfish and so amazing that you would take this on yourself. But have you looked at other things, your family, your friends, and changed your approach?
No, I still have the same amount of fun with my friends. My mom and dad, I maybe treat a little bit differently now. And my other, my girlfriend's family, is probably, they have a little more of a role. And so that's about it.
Which NHLers, and I would imagine there'll be more than a couple of, have reached out to you?
Jack Johnson, Brian McGrattan, Jeff Carter, Mike Richards, Trevor Lewis. I don't know. There's been a bunch of them.
What are those phone calls like?
Pardon, what?
What are those phone calls like from established NHLers?
Most of them are tweets, except Brian McGrattan, got to sit with him for 2 hours. Wow. And he brought me a jersey, and he's a cool guy, I gotta admit. He's awesome.
But based on who has contacted you, can you give us a scouting report on who's going to win tomorrow night, Rangers and Kings?
Yeah, the Kings.
For his buddy Karts and Richie.
Good for them during the playoffs. Good for them.
And you can follow, by the way, you can follow Riley on Twitter, at Dunda_72. And, of course, you and your family raising money for the Hamilton General Hospital, who have been outstanding in your rehab and helping you along. Can you say a couple of things about the Hamilton General Hospital here?
Anything, like, without them, I wouldn't be where I am today. They do everything they can for you to make sure that you're okay. And it's really amazing what they do here and how many people they have, and it's just ridiculous.
They've been outstanding for you. Listen, Riley, thanks so much for stopping by. Really happy that you're on the road to recovery. Would love to see you playing again. Yeah. I've seen you play countless times. I follow the OJ. HamiltonHealth.ca/FightRileyFight is the website to help
fundraiser yesterday, correct?
That's correct. And big Twitter campaign as well. Riley, thanks so much for stopping by. Continued success in the rehab.
Yeah, thank you.
There he is, Riley Dundup of the Hamilton Red Wings and the Burlington Cougars. His old OJHL team came in to visit him as well.
You love that league, don't you?
I do. I love the OJ, man. It's a cool league.
You know what's amazing? Obviously, we're here, we talk hockey, but all sports or organized sports, but there's such a great feeling and there's such a community of family when you play a game. And I love the fact that guys with the LA Kings, you know, have reached out to Riley. I even love even more that Brian McGrath, and I've heard so many great things about this guy.
He's an amazing
And he's had a heck of a story in his life of where he's been, where he's gone, where he is today. And amazing what he does.
And he continues to help and to give as he is on his own road to recovery as well. And congratulations to Riley. Continued success from all of us here at Sportsnet and the entire Rogers family. Big day for Benoit Groom. He is the head coach of Gatineau in the QMJHL. And today announced as the head coach of Canada's national junior team. He joins us now. Benoit, salut, mon ami, and congratulations.
Hey, how are you?
We are doing well. Congratulations on being named the head coach of Canada's national junior team.
Thank you very much.
What is your first order of business now, sir?
I'm sorry, I don't hear you well.
Sorry, I'll speak slower. I tend to rush. What is your first order of business as the new head coach?
Well, you know what? For us, it's we're on our way to Calgary here and get the coaches together, the management group together, and figure out the plan we're going to put in place in order to prepare our summer camp.
Benoit, you've been around this program, Hockey Canada's program of excellence, for a long time. Can you, but you're also, this is the first time the tournament will be played in Montreal and Toronto. Yeah. Can you tell us what that will mean to you?
Well, you know what? I think it's a great opportunity for everyone involved. Having the chance to play this tournament in Montreal and Toronto, two great cities for hockey, and where the fans are passionate and emotional about their team. And I think it's a great opportunity for everybody, and that will force us to prepare and pay attention to details and obviously be real focused on what we have to do and not focusing on the end results.
Are you ready for the scrutiny?
Oh yeah, you know what we all know what it's going to look like, and it's something I believe that we have to prepare our players during our summer camp. I think they've been involved in hockey for long enough to know that Montreal and Toronto are two of the biggest markets in the country, if it's not in the NHL, and I think we'll be ready to face that.
Hey, Benoit, in my experience, I played in the World Juniors 23 years ago. My coach is Dick Todd, who ended up being won a Stanley Cup at the New York Rangers.
Yeah.
We look at Elaine Vigneault was my assistant coach. Who, now, you got young men, 18, 19 years old, year old. You even have maybe a 17 or a 16-year-old that, you know, joins your team. It's a springboard for coaches as much as it is for players. I'm watching Elaine Vigneault with all his success and in Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah, you know what? I know Elaine very well. Elaine played under my dad back home in the middle of the 70s, and I know Elaine because he's from Gatineau also. So I know exactly what you're talking about. But for me, as a coach, it's more a matter of focusing on what we have to do with this team. And you know what? We never know what can happen in hockey. Things change quickly, and I think the future will take care of itself. But for now, it's our team in Gatineau. I'm the coach and general manager in Gatineau, and being the coach of the World Junior team, there's a lot of work to do, and I think I'm not going to look further than that.
And you've made a lot of young men ready to be professional hockey players, and Claude Giroux probably top of that list. When you look around the landscape right now, last year Brent Sutter mentioned, you know, maybe a little bit of a lack of skill around Canada. What are you looking for this year's under 20 team?
Well, we got to find out at summer camp who are the players that going to be world-class players. For us, it's a must. Like, when you look at the previous results, it's not enough. And we all know what the people expect from us in Canada. And in order to have good results, I think we got to have world-class players on board. And what I mean by that, it's players that self-driven, relentless, players who want to make the difference, that players who will accept their role given by the coaches. So what I mean by that, players that are ready to play with the right attitude, players that are going to be ready to play out of their comfort zone, make the adjustment. We all know that we're getting the best players in the country, and we all know that we have guys on that team that are 100-point producer playing on the first line on their team, but it's just not enough. Like, when you look at the previous results the last 4 years, it's not enough. It doesn't work, and I think we got to do more than that. And I think we expect our guys at summer camp to show us that they can be elite players, they can be world-class players, they can be players that adapt their style to what's needed at that level. And this is what we're going to look closely at summer camp.
Well, listen, on that, we'll let you go. And congratulations on the nomination today. Good luck at camp. Good luck with the Olympique next season. And good luck with the U-20 program. Thank you so much for stopping by.
There you go. Can you repeat your story?
Sorry, I was just thanking you for stopping by today. Good luck with the camp. And good luck with the Olympique, sir. And good luck with the U-20 program.
Okay, guys, thanks.
Thank you, Benoit Group.
You know, the other thing, Jeff, and you recall this, for the first time in a long time, the six games of the Subway Super Series that we carry on Sportsnet became a huge factor for Ryan Jankowski and Bruce Hamilton and the rest of the selection group for the tournament. And so you have to wonder if Benny's going to use the Subway Super Series again as a springboard to make that final selection.
And that was one of the reasons why many believed that Darnell Nurse was left off the team last year.
And Samuel Morin.
And Sam Morin as well. That they didn't have, you know, a couple of great games when the Russian traveling team came to town.
You know, my question is, you get a bunch of guys, 90-100-point scorers for their teams. These guys want to produce. They want to score goals. They want to get points.
Yeah.
Let's assume that there's a number of them that come to training camp in the summertime.
Yeah.
Are they going to be so forward to say, hey, listen, if you're going to play on this team, you're going to be a third-line player and you're going to have to learn how to play defense. You're on the team because I like you. Can he make that call that early to actually instill that into the player for the first 3 months? Because players, John, are playing for their coach that they play in junior four.
Yeah.
And their roles are different.
Look what Kirby Reichel did last year. I mean, with Windsor, he's a first-line guy. With the World Junior U-20 tournament, he's a fourth-line guy.
I suspect there'll be a core.
It's all about communication, right?
Right. Yeah. And, I mean, the guys at Hockey Canada, they have a formula that, overall, I think for the last 16 or 17 years has worked pretty well.
And you're right, John. Pressure, scrutiny.
Oh.
A lack of gold medals for Team Canada the past few years.
Wait, what? We haven't won? Are you kidding me?
No, we haven't won. There hasn't been a summit. We haven't had to redo the entire hockey program here in this country. Thanks so much for dropping by today. Thanks for listening to Hockey Central at noon. A big thanks to Dave Maloney. A big thanks to Riley Dunda. Continued success in the rehabilitation. You just heard as well from Benoit Grew, who today was named the national coach of Canada's U-20. Dave Lowry, by the way, alongside Scott Walker of the Guelph Storm, named assistant coaches. You know how to get that one in, John.
Hey, Scotty.
Thanks for joining us today.